From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 740, Terraform versus Bicep and Arm with guest Steve Buchanan. Recorded Monday, October 5th, 2020. Run As Radio is produced each week by Sound Thoughts, LLC. For more information, visit soundthoughtsllc.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. My guest today is Steve Buchanan, who is a director and Midwest Container Services lead on the Cloud Transformation and DevOps team with Avanade, the Microsoft arm of Accenture. He's a 9-time Microsoft MVP, Pluralsight author, and the author of 6 technical books, and has presented at tech events including the Midwest Management Summit, Microsoft Ignite, BitCon, Experts Live Europe, OzCon, and user groups. And he is active in the technical community and enjoys blogging about his adventures in the world of IT at his blog at buchtech.com. Welcome, sir.
Thanks for having me.
Are you doing more online events these days, you know, with the pandemic being the way it is? Were you involved like in this year's Ignite, where we were all just working from home?
Yeah, it's all been virtual conferences, and I've done, you know, inside Azure management. Mm-hmm. And yes, I was a part of some sessions at Ignite.
That's very cool. And it just seems to be the norm now. I think, you know, what are we, 6-7 months into this? And in North America, at least. And I almost feel like I'm getting into the groove. I'm getting invited to be participate in more events. And I kind of know what set I'm going to use and how I want it to look. Like, I'm starting to feel more like the online presentation is not the lesser cousin of the in-person presentation, that we can do things online that are hard to do in person.
Yeah, and staging your environment, right? If you're going to be on camera is important.
Absolutely.
It's one of the new norms, if you know, that they say.
Yeah, that we just have to sort of get used to. Hey, I'm going to read a comment. I know we're going to talk about Terraform and ARM Bicep today. I have a show I did a little while back earlier this year on Terraform with Janelle Crothers. It was episode 687 back in May of 2020. And we sort of talked about this infrastructure as code and the sort of rack of tools you end up using when you really get into infrastructure code. It's not just one thing. It's a bunch of different things. It's certainly what we're going to talk about as well. The comment on this show was from Brendan Teed, who said, it's very telling that you mentioned Puppet, Ansible, and Chocolaty, but not PowerShell DSC for configuration management. In principle, I really want to love PowerShell DSC, if nothing more than because it's a native party of the Windows ecosystem. But the fact that I couldn't run it on Windows 10 made it a non-starter. In the end, Chocolaty was much easier to use when it came to trying to keep parity between developer systems and production. Within my current context, I use container technology to keep things a bit of the same across all environments. And maybe the same should be true within Windows as well. I don't know if you spent any time with PowerShell DSC. I've done a few shows on it. And what was curious about Brendan's timing on this particular comment was I had already recorded a show with Nick Charlebois, who was a guy who built an open source library for called Reverse DSC. So we do the thing that we always wanted from DSC, which was the ability to read the current configuration of a machine and turn it into a file. But he was basically moving towards Office 365. Like the show ended up being about, this is about reading the templates in an O365 template environment and then being able to duplicate them or modify them at other locations, which is not at all what we were originally talking about. And so I even commented at that time, of course, a few months ago to Brendan and said, hey, there's a show coming up that you really want to listen to, because it said it sort of set where PowerShell DSC is sort of headed, which to me makes total sense. Microsoft is about selling cloud, and if they're working on tooling, right, it's cloud tooling.
Right. Yeah. So to add some commentary to that comment, I think, you know, he brings up a good point, right? Mm-hmm. DSC is often forgotten about in the conversation of configuration management, unless it's Windows people. They right. sort of go to DSC first, is what I've seen. And what I've seen in my experience is we'll use DSC on projects where there's a heavy Windows footprint.
Right.
But if there's a heavy Linux footprint, not so much, right? We'll go to things like Ansible, Chef, Puppet, Salt, et cetera. You kind of know the players on that side of the house. But that brings up a really great point. I mean, PowerShell is an extremely powerful tool, and
yeah,
there's a lot of value in it. And it's not often thought about as a configuration management tool, but it certainly can be used for that, especially when you bring in DSC.
It does seem a little... it does seem a little low level, right? I think that we're trying to raise our abstraction layer levels for infrastructure. And this is a little too down in the weeds codey these days. I mean, I've seen folks do significant infrastructure as code strictly with PowerShell, but they jump through a lot of hoops to make that happen.
Yeah, they do. And yeah, it does go down to a lower level. There's also a, you know, I think a lot of folks have a misconception about infrastructure as code. When they say infrastructure as code, they say that as if it encompasses everything you need to do, right? Your infrastructure, your configuration, when there's really differences, right? There's infrastructure as code, and then there's configuration as code. And there's really a hard difference there. And so your infrastructure as code are things like Terraform, Bicep, ARM, which we're talking about today. And, you know, your ARM templates, your CloudFormation templates, if you're, you know, working in, you know, AWS. So that lays down your infrastructure and really gets the foundation put in place. Now, you typically will be doing something like deploying virtual machines on top of that infrastructure. Might be Windows, might be Linux. And then you would use tools like DSC, Ansible, Chef, etc., right? Or if we're in the container world, right, we might use Terraform to go ahead and deploy our AKS cluster if we're using Azure.
Right.
But we still need to use like the Kubctl commands. We may be using Helm. We may be using Bash scripting, right, to do a bunch of the configuration as code.
Yeah.
And it's important to, you know, keep those things in mind that infrastructure as code and configuration as code are two different things.
Interesting point. Yeah, very valid. I also realized, like, looking at that suite of tools, like, PowerShell is clearly Windows first, where Terraform is much more Linux first.
Yeah, but I think...
They do cross over, but I don't think they cross over particularly well.
They do cross over, but I think Microsoft, you know, and even with Ignite being last week, you know, Microsoft has made leaps and bounds as far as, you know, working to make PowerShell a first-class citizen on Linux.
Right.
And they will continue to drive in that direction. So I wouldn't write PowerShell off as, you know, if we're primarily Linux, you know, we're not going to use PowerShell. Now, what I will say about PowerShell is I've typically seen that used more so as an infrastructure as code solution.
Interesting.
And so, yeah, it's just very interesting.
Totally reasonable. Hey, and Brendan, thank you so much for your comment. A Run As Radio mug is on its way to you. And if you'd like a Run As Radio mug, write a comment on the website at runasradio.com or any of the social medias. Every show is published to both Facebook and LinkedIn. And if you comment there and I read it on the show, I'll send you a Run As Radio mug. And don't worry, Steve, you're getting one too. We all guests get a mug.
Awesome. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's a good mug. It's brightly colored. You know, they come in 11 colors, and there's a few folks out there working pretty hard to get one of each. And I figure when I finally get someone with all 11 colors, by the way, they're the Metro colors from the original Windows 8 back when it was still Metro, just because I think that's hilarious.
So do I get to pick a color, or do I need to keep coming back on the show?
Oh, I'll let you pick this color, but you know, the other ones are the ones that get tricky. I think the current record holder's got 5 or 6, but I figure when he gets all 11, I'll have to make a gold one or a black one or something unique to just go, here's your 12th. Now you got the dozen. Although people seem to use them. I've had a couple of folks contact me saying, I broke my mug.
I'll use it. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to that.
It's a proper 12 ounce coffee mug.
Nice.
You know, for some folks, it's like only 12 ounces. Like, how big a mug do you need? But yeah, it's a 12 ounce coffee mug. Well, welcome. Thanks so much for playing along here with some of the other conversations that are going on. We've had great talks about Terraform because it's to me, it seems like a very mature product in this role of building out infrastructure into the cloud in a scriptable way. Do you prefer it, or are you more of an ARM guy?
So I think I have an interesting perspective on the whole ARM compared to Terraform thing. Mm-hmm. Now, I will say, you know, I'm in the consulting world, and so we work with clients.
Yeah, whatever the customer wants.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And so I have seen a shift, right? Over the past couple of years, you might start a new Azure project with a client, and they're good with whatever you want to do. And, you know, they're looking for ARM templates, right? Because they're kind of like going in that direction, because it's like, we're using this cloud provider, and that's what the cloud provider has natively.
Yeah.
But over the past year, that shifted. And so now, usually, when we engage with new clients, they have a standard to use Terraform.
Interesting. Okay.
And so it's interesting to see that shift as the popularity of Terraform has just continued to increase, and I would even say explode, which is no problem, because, you know, we've been doing Terraform for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the reason for that is just it's easy to use, and, you know, kind of the foresight in that it's going to continue to become more and more popular within organizations.
So does this speak to a sophistication of the organization, that they've used the cloud long enough to know it's easier to maintain things in Terraform than it is directly in the ARM templates?
I think it's a mixed bag, but I think a lot of organizations and a lot of the folks on the IT teams, you know, they go to conferences, they read blogs, mm-hmm. they're on Twitter looking at the technical space, and you hear the chatter, right? You hear the chatter of ARM templates and JSON sucks. It's really hard to work with, it's really hard to learn.
I find it easy to build the first version of anything with ARM. Like, that's not that tough. After that, the maintenance of it, getting back into them, seems to be where it gets growly.
Yeah. And that's spot on. But, you know, you hear, I think IT pros hear the chatter about mm-hmm. that, and they hear, you know, how easy Terraform is, and they dive into that first because the learning curve is a lower barrier to entry.
Right.
Now, what I tell folks that are new to infrastructure as code, and kind of the philosophy that I took as well, is I recommend, if you're using a cloud provider, you dive in and you learn the native templating that they have, right? So okay. With Azure, it's ARM templates, and you should learn that, because you should learn ARM, and you should become familiar with ARM, and you should know how things work under the hood. Learn that at least to a certain level,
right?
At least a core level, and then move on to something like Terraform if that's what you want to do. That way, if you hit that limitation with Terraform, if there's something it can't do,
right?
Or, you know, Terraform, when new resources are released to Azure, the provider in Terraform has to be updated. So if you're trying to do something and you can't do it, you'll have to do it through an ARM template if you want to automate it. Or you'll have to use PowerShell, you know, the Azure module for PowerShell, or you'll have to use the CLI, or, you know, you'll have to sort of find an alternative. And if you never learned ARM templates, well, you might be stuck, or you find yourself learning ARM templates anyway.
Yeah, you'll be caught up in it. So I think that's really interesting, because isn't the Azure CLI surfaced in Terraform? Can't I essentially send CLI commands through Terraform?
Yeah, and you can, you can call like ARM templates as well.
Right.
So you can use them together, essentially. Yeah,
yeah. And I think you're pointing out a very interesting case, and it's the edge case that engineers often go to, which is new thing comes down the pipe, providers are running a few weeks or months behind, and I need to use this. And I just like the idea of, okay, so I build an ARM template for that particular new resource, I invoke it from Terraform, and when the provider gets updated, I may rewrite that into something a little more pleasant to manage.
Yes.
Okay.
Also, here's an interesting thing. So I've automated some things. So I've built some scripting, and I'll run them from Cloud Shell. Mm-hmm. And the beauty of using something like Azure Cloud Shell is it has your Terraform preloaded. It has your bash scripting, right? It has, you can do PowerShell, you can do all these things in there. So I've automated things where I'm having to, you know, automate some Helm. I'm having to run some Kubctl commands. I'm doing some Terraform and some straight bash, right? And
right.
I can put that all in the same thing and run it from Cloud Shell and it runs. And I can use multiple languages because of the power of Cloud Shell. And I can even do Azure CLI. And I don't have to necessarily worry about all the dependencies and stuff because it's preloaded there in Cloud Shell.
Nice. So, I mean, it does feel like everybody's being friendly in this too, that there are ways to work at all these different layers that one doesn't exclude the other at any time.
Oh yeah, definitely. And even if you talk to the Microsoft product group folks, you know, you talk to some of the folks that are on the ARM team and mm-hmm. their, you know, attitude towards this is use what you're comfortable with,
right.
Use what you want to use. We'll continue to invest in ARM. And now Bicep. But if you want to use Terraform, by all means, use Terraform. Terraform is working with ARM under the hood.
Yeah.
It's working with the API. So it's, you know, it's all this. It's ARM.
This is not a workaround that's going to break at some point.
Right.
Awesome.
But I love that change in Microsoft that they're friendly to.
They don't want to make all the things.
All these open source tools.
I mean, in the end, the fact that you're consuming Azure is really their motivation. It just happens that motivation now aligns pretty nicely well with us. We're more likely to use Azure, or we can use the tools to make us comfortable. Awesome. Okay, let's make sure those tools work great.
Exactly.
And Steve, I'm going to interrupt for one moment for this very important message.
This episode of Run As is brought to you by the new Virtual Dev Intersection and SQL Intersection Workshop event. If you've ever listened to the SQL Q&A shows on Run As, you've heard the fun knowledge and experience of some of the workshop leaders at SQL Intersection. And for the first time ever, the event is going virtual December 9th and 10th. Go to virtual.devintersection.com to register and check out the amazing lineup of workshops. And there will be great keynotes from Scott Guthrie and Charles Manana, and the workshops cover topics including Azure, .NET development, as well as SQL Server-related materials. Spend a few hours and go deep on important topics at virtual.devintersection.com.
And we're back. It's Run As Radio. I'm Richard Campbell. That's Steve Buchanan. We've been talking a bit about Terraform and ARM and how well they get along, but you said a secret word right before the break, and that secret word is bicep. So there's something new on the horizon here.
Yeah, so bicep is brand new. I think it's... What version is it? It's V0.1.
Yeah.
And Microsoft is calling that.
I'm looking on GitHub and it's like .137 alpha, which to an IT person says, don't do it. That's pretty raw.
It's very, very early.
Yeah.
Microsoft even says, don't use this for production.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's open sourced, which is really cool, and it's different for Microsoft. It's actually cool to see them doing that. But it's a great chance to get in early and start to learn Bicep and start to work with it.
Interesting.
And also give feedback and help shape the direction of Bicep.
Yeah, and in the dev community in Microsoft, this has been the way for the past few years, that as they're building new versions of .NET and the programming language and things, they do it very openly on GitHub, and virtually anybody can participate. You can push issues. You can be a part of the conversation. It's cool to see the Azure team doing this too. So let's talk about this. What is Project Bicep?
So Bicep is it's a domain specific language, right? So it's a DSL. If you're using Terraform, you're probably used to that terminology, and so essentially it's its own language. It's a declarative language. Right. So if you're using Terraform and ARM templates, you're probably used to that already. And it's basically an abstraction over ARM and ARM templates.
Okay. The same way that the Azure provider for Terraform is an abstraction.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
However, with Bicep, essentially it supports, you know, all properties, resource types, API versions on day one of an Azure resource. So if there's a new resource, that's released by Microsoft, Bicep's going to support it.
So is this an alternative to Terraform, do you think?
my personal opinion, I think it is. However, right, with Terraform, it's, you know, agnostic, mm-hmm. right? As long as there's a provider out there for whatever you're trying to automate in Terraform.
Right.
With Bicep, that's not the case, right? It's specifically for Azure. However, this is open sourced, and so we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, there's no reason a Linux provider couldn't be built.
Exactly.
Yeah, but it's not, and I don't know, you know, the Terraform's strength is in the Linux space. That's where they came from. They're and AWS too, right? And their Azure game has gotten good, but
it has. But keep in mind, there are a lot of Linux people working in these product groups at Microsoft yeah. now. And, you know, so as they're building things, it's a different mindset these days.
Sure.
And so, you know, as far as, you know, Bicep, will it be strong on for Linux? You know, as it matures?
Yeah. How do you know?
I think it will be.
It could be. But, yes. There's no reason it couldn't be. It isn't yet, though. This is early days.
Right now, it's specifically just for Azure. Right. And it's, you know, anything you would do with ARM templates, you can do with Bicep. Mm-hmm. But you can do it with less lines of code. Just like with Terraform, you know, you can, you know, deploy an AKS cluster or provision VMs or provision, you know, VNets or what have you. You can write that all up in code in Terraform in less lines than you can with an ARM template. It just,
hey, you know, and the only thing JSON is less verbose than is XML.
Right.
that's the bar you're setting for JSON.
Also with Bicep, it's easier to read.
Yeah.
Right. So I think that was one of the big complaints out there just in the technical universe with ARM templates is it's like
more legibility.
It's really hard to read. Mm-hmm. And with Bicep, it feels more like Terraform and it's, you know, human readable, and it's easier to just sort of write what you need to write and read it, right? Yeah. If you receive some Bicep files from someone else that someone else wrote.
I mean, it does beg the question, why not put this energy into Terraform? Like, why make a new thing? And it's not your responsibility to answer that question, Steve. Like, I should probably go poke some of the team members on that, but...
Yeah, it's so that's a great question, and folks are asking that right away. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to speak directly to that, but what I will say is if you go out on the GitHub page for Bicep, Microsoft answered that question directly.
Right.
And the net is that, you know, they feel that there still is a gap, and, you know, there was an opportunity to create Bicep to fill that gap. That
it may, the implication when I read that those paragraphs is that there are folks out there that have done a lot of work in ARM templates, and retrofitting Terraform on top of that is hard. Would you agree with that? Does that seem reasonable?
I would argue that.
Yeah. Against it or for it?
I would agree with that. I would agree with that. And yes, if you have a bundle of ARM templates that you've written to, you know, stand up some architecture. Yeah. To go rewrite all of that in Terraform, you know, you need to justify
it's a big commit.
The time to do that. It's not a small investment of time to do that.
And it's risky, too. It's your classic platform shift problem, which is stuff that used to work starts to break, and nobody can tell it that you made any difference when you finally get it right, except that you spent a lot of time.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So it's not like, oh, I wrote all these ARM templates and it works. It may not be fun because there's a lot more lines of code and I just want to go do Terraform. Let me go rewrite it all in Terraform. There's still a fair amount of work you're going to have to rewrite that stuff.
Yeah, it's a bit rethink. So in theory, Bicep offers an opportunity to lay over top of the ARM templates you've got and make life easier. I mean, it almost feels like TypeScript to JavaScript. But again,
and that's one of the ways that actually the Microsoft teams describe it.
Interesting. Yeah. So, you know, so again, I hate using dev metaphors when we're talking about an IT problem, but, you know, that seems to be what's going on here.
So in fact, with Bicep, you write your Bicep scripts, files. And then when you're done with that, you have to go through this build process where you compile, and it generates ARM templates.
Mm-hmm.
So you write in Bicep and then you have to go through this build step and you have these ARM templates and you still need to deploy the ARM templates, right? So you can use PowerShell, you could use Azure DevOps. There's a bunch of ways to deploy the ARM templates. But so that's interesting. And from a personal perspective, you know, to me, it's like, now I have an extra step I need to go through.
Right.
But I'm sure Microsoft has their reasons why they kind of went down that path with Bicep.
Yeah, it's interesting to go into. And we've also done shows on Pulumi. You know, like,
I've heard good things about Pulumi.
Sure.
I haven't used it to this point, but.
Wait. You know, what's happening is we're getting past this conversation of just make a scriptable set of infrastructure and into this, how do I build code that's reusable for multiple infrastructures that can be parameterized, that can be built for testing, can be sustained over time? Like all of us that are working in this space right now have this problem of, oh, we have a new app and it needs a new infrastructure. And so you cut and paste from a previous infrastructure, you make a bunch of edits, and now the two have nothing to do with each other. And now you have more code to maintain.
Yes, that is a problem.
Yeah.
Right.
And so it's like, are we reaching the level of sophistication that development is certainly dealt with years, where we actually want to have sets of libraries that are specific to our infrastructure that can be reused over and over again? And you change when we make a major shift organizationally, where we're, you know, we can change one set of libraries and all deployments are affected in a good way, because often we have it happen in a bad way, but, you know, secrets change, those kinds of things.
So with that, I mean, I'm seeing, you know, organizations and our teams as well creating, libraries where you have templates or, you know, snippets of code that you pull from when you need to go do a new automation, and it's similar, but not identical. Then you pull pieces from that code. But from my understanding, right, with Terraform, you would use modules for that.
Right.
And, you know.
Yeah. And again, it takes a certain amount of, you've got to take the time to think in the way of, I want to use modules for this and I want to organize that way. And the only reason I want to use modules is because more than one IaaS stack can depend on it.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, when we think about like PowerShell, we do functions, and you can do functions in ARM templates as well. But as you stated towards the beginning of the episode here, you know, when you get into those functions or nesting templates or some of those advanced concepts with ARM templates, things can get a little rough.
Yeah. You know, all these tools work great in demo, right? And even most of the time through V1, it's how it tolerates the deepening complexity of real projects, the edge case pieces. Like, that is always the case, right? It's the 20, you can count on the 80%. It's the 20%. All of us as engineers, that's what we worry about, the 20%.
And that's spot on. And I've actually seen that happen with Terraform as well.
Yeah.
When you start to get into those more advanced scenarios, and Terraform's not a full-blown programming language.
Right.
I've seen some of my automation engineers run into some roadblocks, and they're like, maybe we should have done this in ARM, or maybe we should have done this in something else. And I think maybe that's where Pulumi answers that problem, right? Because you can use your language of choice to do your infrastructure as code.
Yeah, I think for IT people, it's fairly intimidating because now you're talking full-bore programming languages. I come to this with an incredible level of bias because the people behind Pulumi, you know, folks like Luke Hoban and Eric Rutter, and those are some of the best minds I've ever known in technology. They're all ex-Microsoft people, by the way. But they were also, you know, Luke and Joe Duffy, like, those guys helped create .NET. Like, they deeply know programming languages.
Right.
And so, on one hand, it's like, when we start thinking about sophisticated programming of infrastructure, I'd rather have experienced programmers on the, you know, backing me for my tooling. The question is, can the average IT person do this? Like, now it's really, really programming, and that's harder. That's a more complex set of skills too. So this is an interesting dance that we've grown out our ARM templates to the point where we're struggling with them, where we're dealing with macro languages over top of that and seeing problems with that too.
It really is interesting. And that's why I think even if you're coming from the IT pro side or you're starting out new in IT, it makes sense to go down that programming path, at least for to a certain point, right? So you can understand low level programming. So you can understand, you know, what developers do and some of the techniques. And yeah, if you've been in infrastructure for years, like myself, and you're crossing over, that can be a real challenge. Yeah. And so something like Terraform or even ARM templates or now Bicep, it's easier to adopt that versus, you know, full blown programming language. Right. But as we, as our cloud environments and our projects, you know, with DevOps become more and more complex, having that deep programming is beneficial.
Yeah, I think. And so there's a question of, do you make the incremental step to the next language? And it seems like Bicep is that incremental step. Or do you jump to this, you know, potentially much more sophisticated, if possibly immature approach as well? Because I think we tend to want to get to the end game. Like, that's a disease that smart people have. It's like, I hate showing my work. I just want to get to the answer.
Yeah.
And, you know, showing your work is how everybody gets to come along. So
exactly.
There are only so many opportunities, I think, in our careers too, or that you have such a clear view of this moment. Yes, infrastructure as code is increasing in sophistication. We're having, you know, when we're in this story arc of tooling. And so it's like, do you take the incremental step? Do you make the bigger jump? And, you know, you've got your instincts around all that. So you, right at this moment, I feel like you and I are standing on this hill looking at this and going, huh, we've done this before. This has happened before. Which way do you think we should go? And the answer doesn't seem to be clear at all.
and you know, even going beyond that, right, we can write our infrastructure as code and automate everything and it's all working and that's great. Mm-hmm. We need to maintain that code and we need to put it somewhere and we need to deploy it, right?
Yeah. So
the question always comes up, how do we deploy it? Mm-hmm. We should put it in, you know, pipelines.
Yeah.
We really should be maintaining that in Git repositories, and then we should have a pipeline, right, to build whatever we need to build if we need to do that, and then deploy it to the actual environment. And that way we can have versioning and all of the great benefits that come along with having pipelines.
Right.
But that can be a challenge too, in picking, you know, your CI/CD tooling and strategies there.
Right.
Right. Because there are different strategies. And then are you working with virtual machines? Are you working with PaaS? Are you working with containers? And there's different routes you can go depending on that. And then you have, okay, the infrastructure is one thing. Your applications, right? Because that's what this is all about.
Ultimately,
is,
yeah.
If you don't have an application, you don't have a need for infrastructure.
Right.
So it boils down to the application and it boils down to the developers and it being easy for them and things being optimal, for your end users, whoever is consuming that application. And so now your infrastructure's code is one aspect. And then your configuration is code, right? Okay. Yep. We have the infrastructure. We've laid the networking. We have our VNet peers. We have all this stuff we need. Now we need to configure the stuff that's there, right? I mentioned earlier, actually before the show, that I've been on some SAP on Azure projects. Mm-hmm. So usually what we do is we will go through designing the architecture and all the stuff that comes along with that, making sure that we're in line with SAP, the needs of SAP, and things are going to be supportable and all of that. That's the architecture. The next step is actually laying down the VMs for SAP. And then the next step after that is putting the SAP bits down on the machines.
Right.
And we've moved to a point where that's automated, right? So we can actually, we deploy the virtual machines through automation, and we have to configure those machines, right? There's compliance and things we need to meet on those machines mm-hmm. before we can even put the SAP application on those virtual machines. And so that's where our configuration as code comes into play. And Ansible is a great choice there.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's, you know, automating the install of those SAP applications. But you can abstract from that, right? And you can say, okay, maybe it's not SAP, maybe it's a CRM system, or maybe it, you know, number of applications, whether it's developed in-house or something that you bought off the shelf, it's the same scenario, right? Infrastructure, whatever it's going to run on, whether it's VMs or containers, and then we need to configure those things and we need to put the application down.
Yeah, absolutely. And these things shouldn't be separate parts, really. Like, they should flow together.
You're right. That's spot on. So we should pull all of those things together, and those things should exist in pipelines. It should exist in pipelines to the point of, I need to make a change to my infrastructure. I'm doing that in code. My pipelines just go and make the change. And then I need to make a change to some sort of configuration. I'm doing that in code and it makes it happen. And then on the application side, right, the developers are making updates to the code of the application, and that all should run through a pipeline too.
Absolutely. And it's just a maturing way to think about the ownership of applications. They are this whole chain, and we're each contributing a piece to that. But this also gets into a larger conversation, which I suspect you and I are going to have, about the sort of modern operations pipeline and how everybody should be dev, InfoSec, like everybody should be snapping into this. But I don't know that we're quite there yet, but it's certainly an aspirational goal.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, you bring up some good points, right? Like, as we're doing all of this security, right, there's a term, shift left on security. Yeah. And it's very true. Security actually should be there day one when you start to have the discussions around the architecture.
Right. Well, then this speaks to that governance pipeline, that you don't get to insert an app into the pipeline unless all these boxes are checked.
Exactly.
So
security as code.
Yeah. That's an interesting thought. There's a show right there. Security is code. SaaS. Wait, SaaS is taken. Oh, well. Tinfoil hat is code.
Security is code. Monitoring. Yep. Should be, you know.
They're all part of it.
When we talk about Azure, right, and things like Log Analytics and Azure Monitor, we can actually deploy those things as a part of our infrastructure as code, and we should be.
Yeah, absolutely, we should be. Steve, this is really fun. I think we could go on for quite a while yet, and we'll have to make another show around it. But I really appreciate this sense of the evolution of IaaS, especially with so many more apps being up in the cloud and folks, you know, struggling to maintain everything. So thanks for spending the time with me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This was great.
Awesome.
Fun conversation.
And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.